Hello. Thank you for joining us on the Clinician's Brief Partner Podcast. We are very excited to have a guest today, Dr. Susan Little, talking to us about some, you know, pretty well-known topics to veterinary medicine, like poop. I'm Dr. Katie Berlin. I'm your host and a medical editor over at Clinician's Brief, and I'm really excited to be here. Dr. Little, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, thanks for asking me to be on the podcast, Dr. Berlin, and to Clinician's Brief. So whenever I'm asked to tell anybody about myself in veterinary medicine anyway, I say, like, the best thing to know about me is that I like cats. That's probably all you need to know, is that I like cats. I've had a long career in feline medicine as a specialist, but the only thing that matters is that I like cats.
Well, I like cats too. Yeah, I call my dog a cat dog, so I do love cats. And I also want to thank Hills for bringing this podcast to you today. And we're going to just jump right in. I think we're going to just jump right in and talk about poop. You know, we in veterinary medicine, especially in general practice, spend a lot of time talking about poop. And with our own pets, though, we know it's pretty stressful when we wake up, you know, and it's the middle of the night, we go to the bathroom and we step in something and it's not socks. And, you know, maybe we can't go to sleep at all because our pets are getting us up to go to the bathroom a million times in the middle of the night. And then there's the opposite end of the spectrum, the constipated cat. Anyone who loves cats is probably acquainted with that problem too. And I think everybody in veterinary medicine can relate to the dilemma of the constipated cat and how we never want to have to be the one to give the cat an enema. So, but let's focus on diarrhea first for a moment. We see a ton of diarrhea cases in general practice. What would you say is the typical way that we approach diarrhea in dogs and cats?
Well, I can't speak to dogs at all. I can spell dog, but that's about it. So for cats, we do need to have a consistent and a systematic approach. So when I do lectures on diarrhea in cats, I encourage people to have a fairly basic algorithm that they like to follow. Doesn't mean that you have to rigidly follow it every time, but at least you've got a pathway to remind you of all of the things to check. And some of those will be specific to the signalment of your patient. So we think of different things in younger patients than we do in older patients, for example. And we think of different things depending on the cat's lifestyle as well. So I think having a systematic approach and at least making an attempt to look for the easy things to look for and test for, especially intestinal parasites, for example, is a good way to get started.
Yeah. And I think in general practice, you know, at least speaking for my own experience, it seems like we often will try to take some diarrhea shortcuts, you know, we'll rather than try to work things up maybe the way that we should right away, we just kind of hope that if we throw a couple of things at it, it'll go away, even if we never really find out what caused it. And, you know, regardless of whether that's a correct approach or not, it addresses one concern of the pet owner when it comes to treating diarrhea, which is they just want something to make it stop, right? They want to make it stop like right away. But do you feel like that should be one of our focuses too? Do you think we do a good job of providing that for pet owners? Do you feel like our missions as veterinary team versus pet owner sometimes collide there when it comes to diarrhea?
I don't think they have to collide. I think that there are drawbacks to having an approach that tries to shortcut and avoid doing some of the testing that we should do, because what you've described is kind of a shotgun approach, you know, try two or three common things. But oftentimes clients will, they're not stupid, you know, they'll recognize that that's what you're doing and that you don't know what the cause is. So I think being clear with clients, especially on a topic like diarrhea, where there are so many potential causes, I think being upfront and clear with them and saying there's a lot of potential causes, we can start narrowing down the list and we can do a couple of quick and easier diagnostic tests right off the bat is a good way to go forward.
Okay. Yeah. And I think too, it's important to let them know that, you know, none of the typical ways that we approach diarrhea, even in the shotgun approach, often are going to provide that fast overnight fix that people are looking for. You can't just take a diarrhea medication off the shelf, give it in 24 hours, it's gone, generally speaking. And then, of course, there's constipation too. As a cat lover, I'm sure you've seen your fair share of constipated cats. And their owners of constipated cats are probably the only people who are really excited to see diarrhea. Like in my art museum job before vet med, I sometimes long for those days when there was no diarrhea or enema poop smell. But in all seriousness, those cats are very miserable most of the time. And it's often a recurrent issue and sometimes even will contribute to the decision to euthanize. So what about the typical ways that we tend to manage constipated cats?
So you're asking me what the typical ways are?
Yeah. What do you see in practice as sort of common approaches to the constipated cat?
Well, I think, again, we can't shortcut and jump to treatment without having a diagnosis first. So constipation is a clinical sign. It's not a diagnosis. I think it's important to remember that, and it's important to let clients know that too. So we do need to make an attempt to find out why the cat is getting constipated and go through the list of possibilities for that cat, because that will help us with a more targeted and hopefully a more effective long-term management approach, especially if the cat's had more than one bout of constipation. You know, a lot of cats will have one bout of diarrhea or one bout of constipation in their life, or have them infrequently. And we're obviously somewhat, you know, less concerned about those short-term one-off episodes. But, you know, once things are going on over time for diarrhea or repeat events for constipation, you certainly need to make an attempt to try to find out why. So we really have to remember, you can't just jump to management. You have to find out what's going on with the patient first so you can be targeted.
Sure. Yeah, that is always a good rule. Makes plenty of sense. And when it comes to clients, a lot of times, while they want to find the reasons that we don't keep having this problem, I think they can get kind of stuck on how they're going to use the treatment that we're prescribing in the meantime, especially when it comes to cats, who sometimes make it a little bit harder to help them when they're not feeling well. So what are some of the potential roadblocks that we come across when it comes to, even while we're doing diagnostics, trying to find underlying causes, what we can do to manage diarrhea and constipation in cats? What do we run into that makes it harder for clients to do what they need to do?
Well, I think we run into the things that we would run into when we're treating any disease or clinical problem in cats. And that's that they are not always the easiest species to give medication to. And often that's because medications aren't really well formulated with cats in mind. Even some products that are licensed in cats, not enough attention gets paid to ease of administration. We're seeing that change over time, which is a good thing. But so we run into that with just about any clinical problem in cats. That can be a barrier. I think veterinarians are quite clever in finding ways to help clients get around some of those barriers and try to do their best, especially if it's going to be a chronic use medication. Oftentimes, short-term use medication isn't so much the issue. It's just a day or two. But if it's going to be longer than that, we have to often be quite clever and find ways to help owners get a medication into their cat long term.
And what about diet? Do you feel like diet is a part of, you know, the traditional ways that we've tried to manage diarrhea and constipation in cats? Definitely with dogs, of course. But do we run into problems with using diet as a therapy in cats as well?
When it comes to diarrhea and constipation, we've certainly used dietary therapies in cats, especially for diarrhea, for a long time. We've had products on the market, still on the market, of course, that are higher in fiber or higher in different types of fiber or are low residue. They take the opposite approach. So veterinarians are used to using, I think, therapeutic diets for chronic problems, not so much in acutely, but for chronic cases. We're used to doing that, although it can be frustrating because it's often not clear or not an easy choice what kind of diet is going to work for a given patient. You know, again, diarrhea is caused by many different things. And what might work in one cat for a therapeutic diet might not work in another cat. So it can be a little bit frustrating to try to figure out which diet's going to give the best result. And of course, cats, not all cats readily change diets. And so clients can be quite fearful, quite concerned if the veterinarian needs to try more than one diet. So those can be definitely significant barriers.
So one of the things that you've mentioned a few times is the idea that we have to find an underlying cause. You know, obviously, that's always our mission, is try to keep the problem from coming back again, as well as giving relief at that time. And I want to take this opportunity to talk about the microbiome. This is a word that we're seeing thrown around a lot right now. So what is the microbiome and why is it important?
Yeah, it is a word that we're hearing a lot more of, and veterinarians are having to learn about, because those of us who are graduates have probably heard little or nothing about it. And maybe even some students in school right now are not hearing very much about it. So the microbiome is the term for the collection of organisms that live with us or within us. And so the gastrointestinal microbiome is that collection of bacteria and viruses and some protozoa and some fungi and some other types of organisms that live in our GI tract, probably every mammal's GI tract. We need them. And it's really important that we learn to understand more about the microbiome. And so you might wonder, why are we just talking about it now? Well, one of the reasons is we didn't have good tools until recent years to assess that population of organisms that's living in our gastrointestinal tract. So now that some new tools are available, we're seeing definitely an increase in interest and an increase in published research. So it's moving fast once we got the tools.
Yeah, it's really cool. I just love thinking about that little army of microorganisms in there, like working for you to do what you need to do to be healthy. I love that. But we've been talking about intestinal bacteria for a long time, and probiotics is something that comes up quite a bit in veterinary medicine. How is focusing on the microbiome different than doing what we've always done, which is give a probiotic?
So probiotics are just one very small slice of the puzzle, if you will. And it's really all we could do in the days when we didn't have a easy way for researchers to assess the microbiome. So probiotics are live bacterial products, essentially, that, you know, people sometimes take themselves. They're on the market for dogs and cats. They tend to be composed of bacteria that are only from a few families. So they're one of the concerns that we now have, or one of the things we're realizing now is that there's such diversity in the gastrointestinal microbiome, yet probiotics tend to have representatives only from a few families. So, you know, there's a lot of lactobacillus in them, a lot of bifidobacteria, enterococcus, things like that. So, but it's a fairly limited number of families. So while they often show benefits in cats and dogs with diarrhea, for sure, I think now at the point where we can say, well, we can actually do even better than that. We can move on and help those patients where the probiotic itself isn't helpful enough. And there's a bunch of other problems with probiotic products as well that make it difficult for veterinarians to know which ones to choose and for how long and when to use them.
So if you don't mind, I'd like to take a minute to talk about a study showing some results with Hill's Prescription Diet GI Biome, specifically related to constipation and diarrhea in cats and dogs. What did they find in this study that could have some real significance for how we treat these in vet med?
So it's exciting to see work being done in this area. Now, I will caution that, to my knowledge, only an abstract of this study is available. It's not fully published yet. So it's, at least to my knowledge, it's not published yet. So it's hard to, you can only draw so many conclusions from the abstract. because obviously it doesn't have all of the details. But certainly looking at the abstract that's been published, it presents a very intriguing look at the ability of diet to help cats that have diarrhea and cats that have constipation. And for the first time, really, we may have a diet that could help cats with either of those problems. So we're used to thinking of one type of diet for diarrhea and maybe a different type for constipation, but it may be that moving on from just a simple approach that is, do you have a lot of fiber or do you have very little fiber? Now moving on to exactly what types of plant ingredients are in there gives us a more sophisticated approach and may help more patients. So it's certainly really intriguing and I'm really anxious to see the full study get published.
Yeah, I definitely am as well. I was really excited when we started carrying this food in the clinic. You know, I've had definitely some cat patients on it doing well already. And one of the things that I note that they are talking about a lot with this food is that you can start to see improvement in as little as 24 hours. And obviously, if you have a cat who's very constipated and they need an enema, you got to relieve that symptom to make the cat comfortable. But I do think it's pretty cool to have something where you can actually potentially say to the client, like, you could see results really quickly, even though that doesn't negate the need to work up the problem and figure out why it's happening in the first place. But what else besides fiber is important about the diet? Like, why can't we just use an over-the-counter fiber supplement and get similar results?
So when we're looking at these diets that are designed to have an effect on the gastrointestinal microbiome, what they contain is ingredients that the normal microbiome needs. So all those organisms, especially the bacteria that live in our gastrointestinal tract, they need food. And of course, they eat what we eat. So this approach is looking at, well, what can we put in the diet for the cat that's good for the cat, but also good for the gastrointestinal microbiome so that we encourage the modification of the biome in the disease state. And you'll often hear the word dysbiosis used. So dysbiosis means that the normal microbiome is disrupted in some way. Maybe there's not the right balance of organisms. Maybe one type of organism is dominating the others, that type of thing. So these diets look at what kind of ingredients can we put in there that will encourage the microbiome to shift from that dysbiosis state that could be contributing to the diarrhea to a more normal microbiome. So it's a really interesting approach, especially for the chronic diarrhea cats. I think in an acute case, we have to recognize that there are lots of cats that just have a few days of diarrhea that could happen from getting something unfamiliar to eat. It could happen from a stressful incident. So we're not talking about those cats generally. We're talking about the cats with chronic diarrhea. And looking at a dietary approach, I hope, is going to be a really key way moving forward to help manage these cats.
Yeah, and a dietary approach obviously is preferable to a lot of clients than using a long-term medication especially. And one thing that I love is that it comes in canned food because I definitely have a lot of cats that want that canned food, need that canned food. And getting my cats to take pills is definitely tricky. And the idea of feeding your gut bacteria so they can help you is just fascinating to me. This is something we're talking a lot about now in human health, the idea of eating a variety of plant sources to optimally feed your gut bacteria so they can produce these things called postbiotics that can keep you healthy. I love that we're discussing pre and postbiotics in vet med too now. And I think when we talk about results, at clinical results in studies, obviously we extrapolating that directly to what we do in the clinic every day is tricky. But the fact is that cats are cats a lot of times, and you know we can only do what they'll allow us to do. And stressing them out every day, trying to give them medication, is always always touchy subject with owners. But what about when it comes to the veterinary team? So when we're making recommendations to pet owners, we know they have to believe in what we're recommending and feel comfortable following those recommendations. Compliance is everything, right? So what do you think is the best advice you could give to vet teams in general practice to help clients understand and follow our advice when it comes to GI distress?
I think it's important to make sure that anybody on your team who's going to be talking to a client is actually well-informed themselves, so that the team is giving a consistent message. So that's probably the biggest problem I see, where the owners of the clinic or the management of the clinic has failed to adequately train the support team. And they talk to clients as much or more than veterinarians do. And if their knowledge of what's needed or what you're recommending or what you're doing is imperfect, then the clients may hear something different from the support team than they hear from the veterinarian. So I think consistent messaging is probably job number one.
Yeah, that's great advice. I think a lot of times we undervalue that, the importance of that communication when veterinarians aren't even in the room. So, and we all have cats at home, we know how it is. And it's a good, you know, that's a good time to really relate, I think, between a vet team and a vet client. We're all in this boat together, and we have to figure out how to make our pets happy and healthy. And quick results, if we can get them, are going to, and results that clients can easily give, are going to make them more likely to trust our advice in the future. And that makes everybody happy. So to Dr. Little, thank you so much for chatting with us today. I think this is a really exciting field. I can't wait to learn more.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a really positive change. It's going to move us away from giving antimicrobials, which have been very common in the past, things like giving metronidazole. We're now learning that that might not at all be the best approach. So I think it's moving us away from some methods that we commonly used in the past that really didn't have much evidence behind them. We didn't really know what we were doing with them, and moving us into an area that is likely to have a more positive effect overall on the patient, and hopefully reduce the need for taking extra medications as well in many of these patients with chronic GI problems. So it's a really good move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you again so much to our guest, Dr. Little, for joining us today, taking the time to chat with me about poop. And thank you again to Hills for making this podcast possible. And thank you to everybody for joining us. We'll see you next time. Thanks again to our sponsor and to today's guest for joining us, and thanks to you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, please make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review. We would appreciate if you leave us all of the stars. You can also listen to podcasts on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts, and you can drop us a line at podcasts@briefmedia.com. Clinicians Brief Partner Podcasts is a Brief Media production.